in the rearview mirror, bracket in hand. Man, it is a glorious thing. I cannot wait for the next 5 to 7 days. I mean, the first weekend of the NCAA tournament is my favorite weekend of the year. For the first time, I'll actually be at the NCAA tournament. I'll be in the Indianapolis site.
So this is your first trip?
I know. It's crazy.
My first one was the second round because my parents wouldn't let me skip school for the Thursday. But I think this must have been like 2009 or 2010. It was Villanova and St. Mary's, with St. Mary's winning. And then Tennessee and Ohio. That was Bruce Pearl versus John Gross. And Tennessee won that game.
How about that? John Gross in the tournament.
Akron, how about that? They were, you know, you figure Kent State, you know, in the offseason, we noted that they added some serious transfers. Sincere Carey, Andrew Garcia from Georgia. They had a few others too. I know DJ Johnson from URI put out a video that got him suspended. That was pretty funny. And then Ohio, after winning a game last year, looked like they would be a shoo-in, even without Jason Preston, bringing back Jason Carter. And Toledo, you know, they were on fire, but it's going to be Akron.
Yes. Yes. Akron with a run. Remember, they did nearly beat Ohio State in the season
opening night, right?
Yeah. They're right there. Needed the buzzer beater from, I believe, Zed Key.
Yes.
To beat them. But no, it'll be great. I mean, the Indianapolis region has some really, really good games. Colorado State, Michigan, San Francisco versus Murray, Tennessee, Longwood, Kentucky, and St. Peter's. So, you know, potential second round matchup like a Colorado State, Tennessee or Michigan, Tennessee. And then, you know, potentially like a San Francisco or Murray State versus Kentucky, which would be, you know, really all kinds of fun. So looking forward to that. Looking forward to my off day on Friday when I can, you know, fire up BovadaSportsbook.com and get some gambling done, because that is a good part of March. Brad, I don't know. I don't know how much gambling you plan on doing selection their first weekend, but you know, because sometimes you kind of feel overwhelmed by it. But I have to say, there are some entertaining bets you can make if you want to gamble on some stuff this March Madness.
Because I've never bet on individual NCAA tournament games. I've only done bracket pools and stuff, but I know probably, you know, I don't know what Bovada has his line at, but the most lopsided game seems to be South Dakota State plus 1.5 over Providence, which I think I've only seen you, Sean Paul, and Seth Davis say that Providence has a chance to win that game.
I mean, look, South Dakota State is very good. They run good offense, but I don't quite understand how they plan on getting any stops. They gave 104 points to Alabama. They gave up 87 points to Washington. You know, I think Providence scores 80 points in this game. So if they can avoid giving up 80, I like that Bovada number at 1.5. You know, it's just, you know, that will certainly be the trendy pick. I did note the statistic. I'm sure others have tweeted it, but there are 6 teams that are ranked higher in KenPom than Providence who didn't even make the NCAA tournament. The Friars are a 4 seed. Houston, of course, is the a top 5 team in KenPom. They're a 5 seed. So Mr. Pomeroy, not necessarily having his quite as much influence on the seed list as perhaps some might like.
Oh, I mean, the selection committee put themselves in a real bad spot. They just like went out to lunch on Sunday and totally forgot about updating the bracket. I saw Rocco Miller said that his pre-Saturday games bracket, like a Saturday morning bracket, he had the first 8 seed lines all right. It's like the selection committee just got bored. You know, decided that they were gonna stop trying to make a bracket. I mean, when I saw Providence was ahead of Arkansas, I was like, huh? Because, you know, I was obviously focused on Providence and that they would get a 4 seed. But then I didn't even realize like Tennessee being a three seed, that seems pretty crazy. I was surprised that Villanova got a two seed. I don't think I saw any bracketology that had Villanova as a two seed. Maybe Lucas did late.
I had Villanova, but I also had Tennessee for a long time. Like, I had Tennessee leading into like March 1st.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was just gonna say I've been a long time stockholder in the Vols, and you know, I think the frustrating thing for me is some of the seedings felt lazy, right? Giving Georgia State a 16 seed is lazy. Putting Duke over Tennessee for a two seed is lazy. Putting Virginia Tech as an 11 after what they accomplished in the AC tournament, what their metrics are, is lazy. Putting Yale as a 14 and second on the 14 line when it's obvious that you were going to put Princeton in that exact same spot regardless who won the Ivy League, lazy.
I mean, that's what they did with Akron too, right? That was the max spot.
Right. It's so lazy. It's beyond frustrating to me. You hire these people. This is an important job. People's livelihoods rely on this. And seemingly taking Saturday and Sunday off. I don't know, man. I was very frustrated by it. Finished above Lucas Harkins in the bracket matrix though, and above Jerry Palm and Joe Lunardi. So. I guess I am the second best mainstream bracketologist this year beyond Mike DeCourcy, if anyone knows that I actually am a bracketologist.
I mean, it was hilarious. Rocco tweeted something like, how are we supposed to figure out when the selection committee is going to stop paying attention? Which it seems like they didn't realize Providence lost to Creighton either. The fact that Arkansas was still one spot behind them. But, I had told my parents I would go to lunch with them on Saturday. I was figured I've seen Arkansas and Auburn like 1,000 times in the past month. I don't need to see them. And obviously Texas A&M wins. And I was like, I can't remember the last Texas A&M game I actually watched. Like, I'm going to need to know them for the tournament. And then obviously the selection committee forgot that they hadn't watched any Texas A&M either.
I did not have Texas A&M even on my bracket sheet. You know, I have like a large kind of consideration sheet where I like have every team that's like on the bubble, and they were not even on the sheet. Like, even like when they beat Alabama in like the last week of the regular season, I was like, should I put A&M on the sheet? And I was like, well, they probably have to win the SEC tournament. And then they won the two games. I was like, holy shit, they actually might not need to win the SEC tournament. And then here we are.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, I'm very glad that you enforced our main talking point about this whole stuff on the Field of 68 show. But when you have 20 different criteria that you can choose from, legal, not even the illegal criteria that they've been using. It seems like we want to have two A-10 teams no matter what. You know, we want to have Notre Dame in because they came in second in the ACC, stuff like that. When there's 20 like legal things you can do, then basically it's an eye test.
Right. Well, I loved the Notre Dame selection because it was like, oh, yeah, like, I guess the justification is that they beat Kentucky. Yeah, but Oklahoma beat Baylor.
Texas who's higher up on the seed list.
Right, higher on the seed list, you know?
Dayton beat Kansas, yeah.
Notre Dame beat Auburn, who I think is also higher on the seed list. I could be wrong. But was there Auburn not higher than Kentucky on the seed list?
I don't know. I know Villanova wasn't the last two, which was surprising as well. But you know, I didn't mind the Rutgers pick because it's like putting them in the first four was kind of a nice compromise where it's like the net still means something, but doesn't mean everything. You know, I felt that was a nice balance between the quadrant one wins and the poor net. But that was what I was thinking like last week. This week, when you had Virginia Tech and Richmond play their way in, you had Texas A&M make a push, you had Oklahoma beat Baylor. I was like, man, there's no way Rutgers is going to make it. And to see them and Notre Dame, who I also thought was out, both made it. That was very surprising.
Yes. No, I had left Rutgers out. I was in the minority there. it seemed like. Although I think as the bubble shrunk, some people left them off late. But I was kind of always just like, I don't know how you justify putting a team in that has these metrics, you know. But they did, and I agree, right? Like, I kind of think Rutgers is what the first four is made for, right? Again, you don't say this outright, but putting in the team that's clearly playing like an NCAA tournament team, but maybe doesn't have the resume to prove it in terms of the your metrics and stuff, and just being like, eh, go to the first four, and like, if you lose, you lose, and if you win, maybe you can make a run. Like, to me, that feels like a reasonable way of operating.
So I also wanted to make one admission of being wrong. We do our bad gets, right? And most of them we were spot on, right? All of Oregon State was a bad get. They were 3-20, whatever. I remember you were on Caden Rice, where you had mid-major coaches being like, what the hell is Georgetown doing? One that certainly I got wrong was Uros Plavcic to Tennessee. I was like, what the hell is Tennessee doing? This guy couldn't play at Arizona State. He was whatever at Cleveland State. I mean, what on earth? But, I mean, he fits perfectly to their kind of mantra of just being enormous up front and just having all the size and athleticism. And I thought he had a great SEC tournament.
Yes. No, I mean, he has helped them. I thought Tennessee looked really good. I thought that Kenny Chandler played really well. I think they're really cohesive right now. You know, I just think they're clicking at a high level. They have, you know, enough shooting. They've got athletes. They've got toughness. They've got physicality. And they're a Rick Barnes team, man. I think they have a shot. And, you know, I know when you look at the, you know, some of the futures, you know, right now, you know, Bovada has Tennessee at 14-1 to win the national championship. I kind of like those odds.
So their potential main obstacle, I'm trying to find them right now, would be a rematch with Villanova in the Sweet 16. That would be kind of their first place where I think people will start picking them to drop off. I know I've seen a lot more people than I expected have Villanova in the Final Four. I don't think that's off the table per se, but I was surprised how much Villanova support I was seeing. But Tennessee's playing as well as anyone except for Iowa.
One other thing I will say, kind of regarding the bracket, and I think this ties well to Tennessee. What is with the number of potential repeat matchups? Like, what in the world are we doing with this? It makes no sense to me that you would put Arizona, Illinois, Tennessee, and Villanova in the same region. Villanova's played Tennessee. Illinois's played Arizona. Arizona's played Tennessee. Why would you put them in the same region? Why would you put Duke and Gonzaga in the same region?
They're not looking that far ahead up the bracket.
But why would you do that? Like, it would have been easy to avoid. You send Villanova out west. You send Duke, you know, in instead of Villanova. Then you put Duke and Tennessee in the same region, so the seeding decision, you know, the seeding decision becomes less impactful. It works well.
And, you know, there are a lot of people with their tinfoil hats on saying that the committee orchestrates certain matchups. I don't think that they care enough to orchestrate certain matchups. I think all this stuff is random. Like, I feel the 68, they were saying, oh, of course they'd put Boise State with a potential second-round game against former, you know, Leon Rice's former boss and
Do we actually think that the Southland commissioner, who just looks like a kind of like average old white man, actually even knows that Leon Rice works for...
He has no idea. That was a literal coincidence. I mean, there was so much more that they could have done. You know, and then another thing that people were complaining about were that they match up the mid-majors together in the first round. Again, I don't think that's on purpose. You know, because he has Michigan State Davidson. They have Loyola, Ohio. I agree to just switch and have San Francisco play USC and Miami play Murray State. But this idea that they're picking certain matchups and trying to screw over the mid-majors in terms of their opponent, I don't think that's true.
Yeah, it's kind of hard to justify. Like, there are certain matchups where you're like, what the heck, man? But, like, I mean, I also will say, like, you know, like I actually wanted to mention this anyway. Like, there are a few high major versus high major matchups that have, like, negative juice. Like, every year there's a couple where you're like,
LSU, Iowa State.
Yes, thank you. I can't even begin to imagine myself watching this game. Like, last year that game was Oklahoma versus Missouri. And we were like, all right, this is perfect. Like, the winner's playing Gonzaga, so either way, they're going to lose. Neither of these teams have any juice. They're going to play each other. One of them gets eliminated. The other one gets eliminated the next round. Great. This year, I think the obvious version of that is, as you said, Iowa State versus LSU, particularly off of the Will Wade news.
That was shocking. I mean, he made it this far.
It is hilarious that it went down. But yeah, you know, I don't know. I have no idea what happens to LSU in this tournament. Like, do they roll over? Do they, like, fight? You know, like, what happens here? I mean, like, I just assume I have to pick Iowa State. But I don't know. I mean,
you're gonna pick Iowa State to win? They never win. They can't score. And LSU's got a terrific defense.
But is LSU gonna be there mentally?
I have no idea. They have multiple pro prospects that could be playing for a potential future career, whether it be Tari Eason or Alex Fudge or.
I will say LSU Wisconsin could be very tricky for Wisconsin.
Yes, because there's so much athleticism. They can put Alex Fudge or Brandon Murray or Mawani Wilkinson onto Johnny Davis and really slow him down.
And they have all the rim protection. And
yeah, the Wisconsin bigs are not great athletes to match up with.
I think the two games though with the least juice in the entire tournament are that aren't like obvious, like one team's going to win it, are that game and the USC Miami.
Oh, I was gonna say Seton Hall TCU.
Yeah, that too.
Because like they're both big, they're both just gonna like be super physical. I mean, for Seton Hall, it's just gotta sting so much. You know, with Bryce Aiken, this Seton Hall team is like a 4 seed. And they're looking, you know, primed to make a run. He was just so important in terms of creating offense, and you know, he was like the one guy they couldn't lose. So all the air is out of their sails. Like there's no chance that either Seton Hall or TCU beats Arizona even without Creasa.
Yes, I agree with that. They just don't have enough talent. Maybe I think TCU could give them a game if they just like make it a whole rock fight, but I've been the number one TCU defender on this podcast all year. So
absolutely.
Let's kind of get into, you know, kind of region by region instead of just cherry picking here. And get some thoughts. We're not going to go game by game. Everyone goes game by game. I don't think you care that much about Texas Tech, Montana State, but.
Raekwon Battle. That was one when that transfer happened, I was like, wait, he played for Washington. What's he doing going down to Montana State? And the Big Sky was like the conference of that. You had Kobe McEwen, who was a very good Big East player, goes to Weber State. You have Jalen Cohn, who was a good ACC player, going to Northern Arizona. But it's Montana State and Raekwon Battle that.
In fairness, Washington and Montana State are like 15 spots apart in Genpom.
And I'm sure last year, I mean, it was even worse for Washington last year. So.
Raekwon only plays like 20 minutes a game.
Yeah, I thought I seen he was the leading scorer, but he's not. He started zero games.
He has been a big-time scorer for them lately. So he scored in double figures twice before January 20th and has been in double figures all but three games since. So he's really turned it on.
They're a leading scorer, Xavier Bishop. He was a guy, right? He was out in the portal for a while, and he put up good numbers at Kansas City. Yeah. And I was like, why isn't anyone picking up this guy? But
well, he was a sit one, play one.
And he's 5'8".
Yeah, he was sit one, play one. So they took him because they brought, you know, the first year of Danny Sprinkle.
Yeah, you're right.
I think they had, like, they still had Harold Fry. So it was made sense to take a sit one, play one point guard. And it worked out because they wound up with sit one, play two because of the COVID year. So I love how we said we're not going to talk about Texas Tech, Montana State, and then proceeded into like a 1 minute long diatribe about Montana State. But no, let's start with the West. You know, I think obviously that Boise State-Memphis matchup stands out. I think it loses a little bit of juice because of who they're staring down in the second round. Right. I mean, I don't think either of us really believe that someone's beating Gonzaga in the first weekend. But, you know, that game has seems to be a lot of fun. It seems like everyone's going to pick Memphis. I kind of want to pick Boise just because it kind of feels like free points. You know, everyone's going to pick Memphis. But, you know, Memphis has played so well that it's hard for me to go against it here.
So I think the Memphis playing well thing is a little overrated because, you know, they're whatever, top eight in Torvik, whatever it was, since Imani Bates sat out. But that's going to be bolstered by beating Houston twice, who is incredibly high in the metrics. And, you know, this tournament will be a good test whether this Houston being an analytical darling is fraudulent or not. You know, the exact opposite of the Providence situation. So I think some of Memphis's positive plays being a little inflated by that. I mean, they're still turning the ball over. I think against Houston, they on Sunday, they really did not shoot the ball well from the perimeter. But, you know, this is a tough matchup for Boise because Boise's whole sell is that they're super big and athletic positionally for a mid-major. Well, Memphis is bigger and more athletic. I mean, Boise State may have more athletic wings with Akot and Kijab, but that Memphis front court that's going to have Jalen Duren and DeAndre Williams going up against Degenhart and Armish. You know, that's a huge size and athleticism advantage in the interior. So can Boise turn over Memphis enough and hit enough shots when Marcus Shaver is like their big time creator? You can put some size on him if you're Memphis. So I think it's going to be tough for Boise State in this one.
No question, it's a tough matchup. I agree. I mean, I think your goal if you're Boise is to like make this thing as much of a rock fight as possible. I mean, you need this game in the 50s, and you need to use your clutch gene. You need to be the better coach team, which I think they are. But, you know, we'll see, man. I mean, I think that game is going to be interesting. I think a lot of people would have picked Memphis to beat a one seed if they didn't get matched with Gonzaga.
I had meant to do this research before the show, but anecdotally, it feels like one seed loses in the first weekend every year.
Yes.
Except for the year that there were four number one seeds. But I think if any of these one seeds are losing early, I would have said Baylor coming in because they're hurt. But I don't think Marquette certainly can't beat Baylor, I don't think. And North Carolina, I don't know if their kind of hot couple games there was a mirage or not. Because they got pounded by Virginia Tech, and right before they beat Duke, they struggled with Syracuse.
What do you think about San Diego State versus Creighton, or the winner of that game, I guess, beating Kansas? I really like San Diego State. I don't know that I'm going to pick it, but I would not be stunned.
This is the first time that I've not filled out a bracket immediately after the selection show, so I'm still letting everything percolate, listen to what I'm saying.
Wow, look at you.
But
I had to submit my expert bracket by 9 p.m. Eastern.
Wow, you couldn't even watch the NIT selection show.
Oh, killer.
St. John's got snubbed.
Oh. No, I had to submit my expert bracket, and then I got a Slack this like afternoon at like 1 o'clock that was like, yeah, so 150,000 people have seen your bracket. I was like, oh geez. That makes me feel good.
No, but I think San Diego State and Creighton could both have a shot against Kansas.
Right.
Creighton has an enormous rim protector in Ryan Kalkbrenner. They have like a front court advantage over Kansas. And they have wings with sides like Arthur Kaluma or Ryan Hawkins that could pose an issue for Kansas. And Kansas's guard play is not dominant, right? So I think these two defensive-minded teams could make like make life difficult for Kansas. Now,
right? I just see both of those teams being able to make this game like 65-62 with 4 minutes to go. You know,
right? And you know, San Diego State has a great rim protector in Mensah. They have super athletic, versatile pieces, guys like Matt Bradley and Pulliam and Keyshawn Johnson, all these guys, Psycho, up and down the lineup, they're strong and physical, and so it's why the Aztecs are one of the best defensive teams in the country. Now, they're a tough watch. I'm not sure if I'm racing to my TV to watch San Diego State, Kansas, or even San Diego State, Creighton.
No, but. No, I think you're right that that's probably the best chance of a one seed going on first weekend. Back to the West though. The 5-12 and the 4-13 seems like there's some trendiness to both New Mexico State and Vermont here. Are you buying either?
I saw Vermont in person when they played Providence in December. There's no way this team's beating Arkansas. Vermont has two good players. They have Ryan Davis, who's a very good scoring big man. And they have Ben Shungu, who is very athletic for the American America East.
He can
score all three levels. Right? But their supporting cast outside of those guys stink. And if you're Arkansas that has a ton of size and athleticism, you can put Devo Davis on Shungu. It's going to be tough for Davis to keep up with Jalen Williams. I mean, Davis got dominated by Nate Watson. People might not remember it because the score wasn't that lopsided. That's what Providence does. But Vermont was not in that game from the opening tip. And that was without Jared Bynum, too. So I would be stunned if Vermont beats Arkansas. Literally stunned. And now Arkansas played with their food last year against Colgate. Ended up pulling it out. But I can't stress enough how stunned I would be if the Catamounts pulled this off.
Yeah, I know Bovada has only a 5-point spread. Like, again, like, I wouldn't be surprised if Vermont hangs in early because they're going to hit shots. But, like, I just can't feel in my heart of hearts that, like, they win that game. And again, maybe I'm like, to me, again, Vermont, has run through the American East. They've lost once since December 7th when they lost to Providence. They've been really, really good. They won their conference tournament games by 39, 32, and 39. I mean, they have been as dominant as you could possibly be. But, like, this doesn't even strike me as, like, a supremely talented Vermont, right? I mean, No. This is not a Anthony Lamb Vermont. This is not a, all the way back to, like, the, Trey Bell Haynes Vermont. Like those guys to me were bigger difference makers than like Shungu is. I know Shungu's had a great year, but like, and I know Davis can stretch it, but it's just like, yeah, I mean, I don't see how they win this game with the, the athleticism, the physicality with how good Note is. I just think they kind of overwhelm them. Yeah, I really do. And then the UConn New Mexico State game, Brad, to me, is one where I was surprised New Mexico State got the 12 instead of the 13. So probably a favorable draw if you're UConn. On the team, well-coached. Chris Jans does a good job. He's in the mix at some bigger jobs right now. Kansas State, Mississippi State, potentially Missouri. They're always athletic. They're always talented. But, I just kind of view them playing a similar style of game to what UConn wants to play, physical, get on the glass, toughness. And I'm just not sure that's a recipe that can work when you're trying to, you're trying to beat UConn at its own game. I just don't know how you pull that off.
And UConn has a lot of guys that they can throw at Teddy Allen, right? You have Andre Jackson, you have Tyrese Martin. You could even go super big if Allen's beating you up inside with Whaley, right? So UConn has a ton of size. They have a ton of length and athleticism on the wing. That's going to be tough for any mid-major team, to deal with the Sonogo inside and guys like Jackson and Martin on the wing.
Yeah, which, again, I wouldn't be surprised New Mexico State hangs in.
I mean, all these 12 and 13 seeds hang in every year, pretty much.
Yes.
Trying to think of, like, one notable example where they did not hang in.
I was going through... Actually, I found one yesterday. I'm going to find it. Because I was like, holy cow, like, what in the world happened here? I believe it was the last year that Akron went to the NCAA tournament. 2013 Akron. Yeah, Akron was the 12th seed in 2013 with Keith Dambrot, and they proceeded to lose 88-42 to VCU in the first round.
I remember that.
some legends on that Akron team. Demetrius Treadwell, Zeke Marshall, that front court was tremendous. But that was Troy Daniels, Javonte Redick, Rob Brandenburg, Darius Theus, and Travion Graham, VCU.
I was always a big Travion Graham guy.
And some good future down transfers on that VCU team, including Justin Tuyo and Teddy Oki Raffer. How about that?
So here's
absolute dudes.
Here's a 5-12 that wasn't close. Colorado over Georgetown last year.
Oh yeah,
that was a 23-point game.
Jabari Walker game.
Yeah, he was unconscious. Yeah. Villanova Winthrop wasn't that close last year. I remember watching most of that game.
No. Yeah, everyone was picking Winthrop because Villanova was out with Gillespie, and then like it just never got off the ground, you know.
Ooh, how about? I don't remember this game at all last year, but Oregon State beat Tennessee by 14 in the 5-12 game.
Jeez. But anyway, I don't think this West region is going to be like super, super dramatic in the first weekend. You know, obviously there's, you know, the potential that Duke could lose. You know, they get the winner of Davidson and Michigan State, assuming they can get past the Fighting EJ Anasikis at Cal State Fullerton. But, you know, I personally don't see Duke losing to Davidson or to Michigan State.
Yeah, no way.
They're too good.
Texas Tech is a tough team for me because, I mean, they've done well all season. They have a really good defense, but they're very foul prone, and then their fans complain about it after every single game. Them and St. John's, where it's like, why do the refs hate us every game? Well, if it's every game, maybe you guys are actually fouling.
Because they're like West Virginia, you know, yeah. Like when West Virginia was, it was like, let's foul you every possession. You can't call them all. That's what Texas Tech does. They foul you every possession. You can't call them all.
So Texas Tech could run into an Alabama buzzsaw, and
or they could run into a complete Alabama flop.
Absolutely, but that's why Alabama is like the chaos of this tournament. I mean, Alabama could get blown out by Rutgers, you know?
Yes, they could. How hilarious would that be? Just getting worked by Pikel, the boys.
Alabama has been playing their best basketball recently. It feels like the last truly scary Alabama moment we had was that first half against Kentucky when Kentucky didn't have Wheeler or Washington.
It's true.
Which then they chucked away that lead. But yet, like a Texas Tech Duke, I mean, Duke's defense has not been good. And Duke has a ton of talent and a ton of size. But Texas Tech can really muck it up. So I'm having a real tough time with the Red Raiders because I wasn't planning on putting them super far. But I wasn't planning on putting Duke super far, and I wasn't planning on putting Alabama super far. So
I will say this. I think in this region, the West region, you do not want a ton of first round chaos.
No.
You want the Sweet 16 Texas Tech Duke game. You want the Gonzaga Arkansas Sweet 16. You want Gonzaga Duke in the Elite Eight. I mean that's really what you want. You don't want like Gonzaga Davidson in the Elite Eight. There's no fun in that. They get wiped off the floor.
UConn Arkansas could be the game in the second round though.
It could be. Which again, why you don't want that much drama in the first
Well, so which region would you tolerate the most craziness?
I mean, I think the South. Because the South, it's either way, it's fun, right? If you have craziness, you could get like a Loyola Chicago Colorado State Sweet 16 game, which would be a lot of fun, like a truly great basketball game. You could get, you know, UAB or Chattanooga making a push. Or if you get no drama, you get, you know, Arizona, Illinois, Houston, Tennessee or Villanova as your kind of final two teams standing. I mean, that's either way, it's fun. But I think you want the drama in the when you've got the really good mid-major teams.
I've been really surprised with the amount of Chattanooga love I've seen over Illinois.
Yeah, let's pivot to the South region. Sure. Let's talk Chattanooga. Go ahead.
Feels like, you know, kind of similar to Boise State Memphis, right? Where Boise State's whole thing is like, we're a mid-major team that is huge on the wing and very athletic. Chattanooga's whole thing is, we're a mid-major team, but we have a legitimate high major starting center. Well, Illinois has one of the best centers in the country, and that center is absolutely enormous. Like, Silvio D'Souza is not an advantage in this matchup.
Right. I think people are being like, oh, well, you know, D'Souza is a better matchup for Kofi than any other, you know, any other mid-major center, right? You know, Akron center is like 6'7". You know, there's an actual mat, you know, D'Souza can actually hang. But at the same time, as you say, Brad, like, they're not winning that matchup. You know, Kofi's still going to get his.
And it cuts both ways, because if, let's say, that was South Dakota State and they're going to spread you out, now you're pulling Kofi away from the rim. But Silvio D'Souza's in. So if the team is really small, then maybe they say, oh, on the perimeter, we can pull Kofi out, we can drive by him.
But right. When I mean, realistically, that's what Loyola did, right? I mean, last year, Loyola beat Illinois by playing Krutwig on the perimeter the whole game and just, like, cutting him to death. Like, Kofi got his on the offensive end when they could get one-on-ones because Krut had no chance. But they just kind of pulled him away from the rim and then cut off of it. They had no rim protection. You know, that worked well. I like this Chattanooga team, right? I think it goes beyond D'Souza. I mean, Malachi Smith is one of four players in the last 30 years to average 20.6 rebounds, 3 assists on 40% from the three and 50% from the field. Like, he's really, really good. The other three guys are on the NBA or all have played in the NBA. But Malachi,
right, but I'm saying like right. A bunch of mid-major teams have a really good guards. The thing that makes Chattanooga different is that size.
The size, but it's also the positional size. It's not just D'Souza. It's Malachi Smith is 6'4" and he's your point guard. Darius Banks is 6'6", 220 and he's your wing. You know, David Jean Baptiste maybe only 6'1", but he's kind of sturdy built. Yeah. So I think from that perspective, no, I mean you're right. I don't love that Illinois. I would be stunned. No, but like I don't think that it's necessarily like the matchup. You know, I just don't. I think UAB matched up with Houston better. You know, I noticed that earlier, but Houston's 1-4 this season against top 50 KenPom teams. Guess who's a top 50 KenPom team?
Would that be the Blazers?
That's correct. Plus, look, I said this on Philly CTA last night. When you're the best guard on the floor, you'd be pretty good. UAB is the lower seed in this game, but they have the best guard on the floor.
Is Jordan Walker better than Kyler Edwards?
I think so.
UAB is a team that I wish I watched more. I watched some of them versus Middle Tennessee, and I watched some of them against Louisiana Tech, but
it is amazing. Again, when we talk about every team that can't have enough, has way too much depth, all of a sudden being like having no bench. Conference championship game for UAB. They played 7 guys. Always attrition. Josh LeBlanc hasn't played in like a long time.
I literally pulled up their sports reference to see Josh LeBlanc's stats. And he's not
you anything. Love Josh LeBlanc.
I do.
Huge Josh LeBlanc guy.
I mean, he was a super athletic four-man that could step out.
Great potential.
Yeah, I mean, this is transfer haven. I mean, was Tavon Loven a transfer? Because if not,
no, he was not.
So but 9 of their top 10 scorers are transfers.
Correct, and all 5 starters are transfers. Now that Lovan is not playing.
How about Trey Jemison? I didn't see that going over this well. Man in the 5 spot. And then Quan Jackson, I mean, he was someone that a lot of, like, I think URI was in on him as a transfer, a bunch of teams. He's been really good, too.
Yes. Agree. Him and Ertel were in that first class that they took, and then they got him to come back for COVID year. This starting lineup is so old. Jordan Walker is in his 5th year of college, was born before me, a month before me. Quan Jackson was born in 1997 and is in his 7th year, 6th year of college, 7th year of college. Ertel was born 9 months before me. You know, this team is old as heck. Trey Jemison, born 2 months after me.
A huge key of this season was getting your COVID players back.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, Colin Gillespie was a COVID player. And Jermaine Samuels hasn't even been good this year. But, you know, having an experienced guy, I mean, he's still averaging double figures. He had a huge game, I think, against UConn. We just went over UAB's COVID guys. Houston got a former UConn COVID guy and Josh Carlson, who is like one of the best players. Do we think that a Houston can still bully UAB on the boards? I mean, UAB's got to have more size than a lot of the teams in the American.
I mean, I think Houston bullies everyone on the boards. They bullied, you know, they bullied teams in the Final Four, in the Elite Eight in the Final Four last year. I mean, that's just who they are. Like, I'm not betting on anyone to win the interior. It's just, can they hang around? You know, I think UAB can probably hang.
Because without the Indiana-Wyoming result, I think the most likely 12 over 5 is UAB over Houston.
Yes.
I think maybe Indiana has a better chance against St. Mary's just because they're more athletic. But I wouldn't pick Wyoming over St. Mary's.
Agree. Is that in the South region? No.
No, that's bottom left.
Let's wrap the South. The Colorado State-Michigan game has potentially a lot of fun.
I think that's the toughest first-round game to pick.
100%. Because Michigan is impossible to read.
Because they have been better, but they're on this one-win, one-loss pattern. They have an enormous, extremely talented center in Hunter Dickinson. But maybe Colorado State could spread him out, put Roddy at the 5.
Right. I mean, at the end of the day, like, Colorado State's going to have to send doubles on post catches. And they're going to have to be really good in rotations. Okay, I don't, you know, teams with far better centers than Deshaun Thomas and James Moores have been double teaming the post against Hunter Dickinson this year.
It's going to come down to the Michigan role players.
I mean, Caleb Houston has shot the ball really poorly away from Ann Arbor.
I mean, but pretty much shot it poorly all season. Yeah.
Some familiarity with the rims. Playing at the same arena they played in the conference tournament.
Yeah, I think Caleb Houston hitting 3-pointers is key. Getting a lot of production from Giabate at that 4 spot, you know, being oversized 4, that's also going to be key as well. But
agree. And then, of course, there's Loyola Chicago. What's up?
Well, what was I to say?
Yeah, what were you saying about Loyola Chicago?
No, I said that Colorado State and Michigan was going to be the battle of the role players.
Oh, yes, 100%. 100%. Need a big Chandler Jacobs game for my Rams. Huge challenge. But then there's Loyola Chicago. They get Ohio State.
This is another one. Feels like everyone has Loyola over Ohio State.
I mean, Ohio State's trending so poorly.
So is Michigan State, but I haven't seen a ton of sway either way between Davidson or Michigan State, but it feels like everyone's on Loyola.
Well, Michigan State did beat Wisconsin this past week. Ohio State lost to Penn State.
No one likes Wisconsin. Everyone said that they're a fraud and Johnny Davis is banged up.
He is banged up. But anyway, I do think it's a good matchup for Loyola. Maybe they'll struggle a little bit with the interior size. But I think, again, if you're...
They don't have a ton of size.
Who, Loyola? Yeah.
Buckeyes.
Well, they do have a lot of size, but they don't have, like, size in the traditional sense. Like...
Bulky guys.
Yeah. Right. They have, like, Zedke and Kyle Young. Like if Loyola loses this game because of 30 Zedke and Kyle Young post-ups, they'll live with it, right?
Yeah.
You know, it's like Liddell and Branham. And I think Lucas Williamson's a really good matchup for Branham. And Ahir Uguok's a really good matchup for E.J. Liddell.
Agreed.
And I would not be surprised either if Loyola beats Villanova. And people can call me a homer if they want, whatever. But, like, that is a game where both teams are going to be willing to play this game slow. It's going to be a possession-to-possession game. Loyola shoots the piss out of the ball. Braden Norris is so clutch. Like, Braden Norris and Colin Gillespie, it's going to be like the Spider-Man meme. It's like, who? Like, instead of dribbling into post-ups, Braden's going to be, like, dribbling into turnaround fadeaways from the mid-post. It's going to be great. But, like, that's a game that, like, I just don't see how it's not close with, like, 5 minutes to go.
Villanova, another team that doesn't have a ton of size that could punish a traditional mid-major front line, right? Eric Dixon, half the time he's not even looking to shoot. Same with Samuels. But, you know, they go small a lot.
And again, same deal, right? Like, if Eric Dixon wants to get 20 posting up Loyola Chicago, I'm pretty sure Drew Valentine will live with it.
But I did have an issue with you, Field of 68 people, saying Loyola had more tournament experience, more readiness than Villanova. I mean,
they made I said that.
I said that it was an advantage for Loyola in a matchup against Loyola. It was an advantage for Loyola in a matchup against Villanova that Loyola was so battle-tested.
I think it's an advantage for Loyola against anyone that they're battle-tested.
Villanova has guys that played in the national championship game.
And Loyola and
it made the same round as Loyola last year.
No. I'm not saying Villanova isn't battle-tested. I'm just saying it helps that Loyola's been on the stage. Right? Like Loyola will not walk into that gym afraid, is what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Also, the best part about this, by the way, is that Bovada has offered some sister jean lines. They're glorious. So the first one, and I don't know if the line has moved because I saw this the other, 2 days ago. I took a screenshot. How many times will sister jean be shown during the round of 64 game? Live shots only from tip off to final buzzer must be featured and not in the background to count towards the wager. Over 2.5 is plus 130. Under 2.5 is minus 170. So it is a fair point that live shots only. Because they will definitely show up like a taped thing of like the pregame prayer. But I still think you hammer the 2.5.
They are definitely showing her at the start of the game. They're definitely showing her at least once at the end of the game, win or lose. Probably if it's a win, they probably show her more. But even if they lose, they're going to cut to Sister G to see her reaction. And then it's just one other time in the game they have to show her. I think over is a stone cold lock.
Agree. I think that wraps up that region.
Just one thing on Bryant.
Oh my gosh.
They're building a stadium in 2030. That just came out the other day. I mean, Are we even going to be here in 2030? I mean, that 2030 feels like it's 9,000 years away. We're probably all going to be in like a nuclear apocalypse bunker by then. Anyway.
The cherry pot.
Doesn't 2030, like if I told you I'm doing something in 2030, you're going to be like, I don't care. That's like 10 years away.
Well, my guess is it's a conference. It's a conference realignment push. There's been plenty of conversation with the MAC. So
supposedly they're going to the America East.
We have sources on this, Brad. Are you breaking?
No, KMAC tweeted it.
KMAC tweeted it.
Yeah. William says the belief is that Bryant's going to the America East. Which is is that enough of a step up from the NEC to not potentially just?
I thought you were going to call it neck. You're going to get killed.
I was so close, but
that was a great error in the podcast history.
Yeah, because you wanted to record these like 10-minute intros on these coaches of teams I've never considered watching.
This is big Merrimack slander. Very rude.
At the time, they were in Division II.
Well, no, they were moving up.
Right, so they had not played a Division I game yet. Because the point was we wanted to talk to Joe Gallo to hear...
It was a compelling interview.
Interview. And I agree it was a compelling interview to hear what it was like transitioning to Division I. But I didn't know anything about what they did in Division II.
I will always remember the fact that I asked him what the most clear difference from Division I to Division II was, and he said that the refs cost a lot more money. Great answer. But anyway, yes, 2030, Bryant, Peter Kiss. It's going to be fun. I'm excited about that.
Did we talk about their fight in the stands?
Oh, it was ridiculous.
And then they tried to orchestrate a court storm. The AD was like, okay, when I count to three, everyone can start storming.
It was so – and, like, when there was, like, the stoppage, like, 3 seconds left, Wagner's like, all right, we'll get the hell out of here.
I mean, and there's a 1,000% chance that Wagner started the fight. I mean, you're on a four-hour bus ride. Well, no,
what I'm sure happened was that the Bryant kids are a bunch of, like,
we're drunk
frat bros, drunk off their ass. Yeah. And they're like yelling like obscenities at the Wagner parents and like the Wagner friends. And the Wagner friends and parents eventually were like, you know, screw you and like throw a punch. And
we're down 36 to 6 after our 4-hour bus ride. I would be ready to kill somebody after that.
I don't even know what I would do. You know,
you take a 4-hour bus ride to see Siena and they open the game down 36 to 6.
You're losing my shit.
And you can't go anywhere because you need to get on the bus on the way home, and they're not leaving mid-game.
True. Yes. Shout out to Peter Kiss, the villain of March.
So many down transfers are just killing it.
They do agree.
You mentioned EJ Anasicki earlier. You got Peter Kiss.
Oh, yeah.
Jordan Walker.
Jelly Walker, yeah.
Jair Davis was the... Providence legend, Jair Davis.
He's a monster.
He didn't shoot it at all, though.
Yeah, but he's just like got an old man game, getting into the mid post.
I didn't even think he looked that good in the Delaware Charleston in the championship.
I mean, I don't think he'd actually be a good high major player. I think he's at the right level.
Yeah.
Very. I mean, I think he might have been eventually able to turn him into like a Isaiah, not a Jay Jackson. Who is the kid who transferred George Mason?
Isaiah Jackson.
It was Isaiah Jackson.
He could shoot it, though.
My gut was correct. But you could get Jair to make shots, I think. We'll
see. I was a big Isaiah Jackson guy.
I loved Isaiah Jackson.
People hated him because his game was so ugly. Like, he could barely dunk, and he was 6'6". He dribbled super high, and he was moving at, like, half mile an hour. But, like, he's got stuff done. He defended three positions. He hit his free throws. He averaged, like, 10 points a game.
All right. Anyway, let's move to the Midwest Regional. We mentioned Kansas being vulnerable. We mentioned that San Diego State. We also mentioned the Providence game off the top.
Oh, my God. I'm freaking out, man. We just need one win. Just get us one.
It's going to be hard to beat Iowa if you can beat South Dakota State. It's going to be hard to beat Iowa. Because I was in Indy watching that team. Holy cow, are they good.
I mean, in a hypothetical Providence Iowa game, and now it would be hilarious if Richmond beats Iowa, right? Because you got to do Manaea on Keegan Murray.
Oh, it would be so funny if after all this and Iowa looks great and everyone's being like, oh, dark horse Final Four, they lose in the first round.
Especially because Richmond has no juice, right? They have one good athlete, right, in Burton. Their bigs are all kind of skill based and slow. But yeah, so like Manaea would have to guard Murray. What the hell is Providence going to do when Iowa pulls Rabraka after 2 minutes and puts in Chris Murray? They're going to have Nate Watson trying to like run around chasing Patrick McCaffrey. Like, I don't know. It's a nightmare. Anyway.
Yeah, Iowa looks great. They have just great cohesion right now.
It was all when they put Tony Perkins as the starting two. And they moved Toussaint to the bench.
Let's wrap up this region. We didn't really talk about the bottom of it. We mentioned Wisconsin LSU potentially. How about Auburn? I wanted to get to them a little bit. I have this stat coming in our – we have what the danger rankings at SI, the top four seeds that are most in danger getting bashed the first weekend. You know, the matchups are okay for Auburn, but they've been so bad away from home. So since January 25th, they played 6 games at home and 7 games on the road or on neutral courts. The 6 home games, they're 6-0, and they've won all 6 games by double figures. In these 7 road neutral games, they are 3-4, and the 3 wins are a 1-possession win over Missouri, a 1-possession win over Georgia, and an overtime win over Mississippi State. Like, that's pretty damning. And Wendell Green shooting 29% from the field in those road neutral games. Katie Johnson shooting 34% in those road neutral games. Not good.
Are you considering USC over them?
I have Miami to win that game, the first round. And then I do have Miami to beat Auburn in the second round. That's correct.
Wow. Miami's so small, though.
Yeah, but they have the guards. They pull, you know, they're really good. And Jordan Miller's been really good.
I mean, you've probably watched more USC than I have. I've made a point to watch him a couple times in the past week. But I feel like Mobley's mobile enough that, you know, he should be able to hang in a guard-oriented game.
What were the odds of Drew Peterson becoming a first-team All-Pac-12 guy?
Dude, you gotta have so much sympathy for... You have to have so much sympathy for Rice. I mean, every time they get a good player, it's when they're not at Rice.
The craziest part is the success that those guys have had moving up.
Yeah, Trey Murphy... Arsalan Kazemi, Drew
Peterson. The only bust is Connor Cashaw.
That's right.
He's a major bust.
He's one of the more forgettable Big East players in the past 2 years. I actually had a whole list of all the Rice guys. You can keep going on your Peterson thought while I find this list.
I think USC is good. I just really like this Miami team. Like, I think they're playing with a ton of confidence. The guards are tremendous. Like, I also just like don't believe Auburn's going to a Final Four. And because of that, I'm okay with picking them against them in the second round, being, you know, living with the result.
So who do you have in the Final Four here? Iowa?
Yes.
I mean, it is going to be hilarious if they lose to Richmond.
It's also going to be hilarious if they make the Final Four. Like, all the knocks on Fran, all the, you know, this and that.
It was,
I mean, Fran McCaffrey's done a legitimately amazing job.
It was during the season when I said, I couldn't imagine being an Iowa fan. You lose 2 guys of the NBA, and then you lose in the second round, and when are you ever going to get that good again? Just like a month later, they're playing even better than they did last year.
Fran is on a tremendous job.
Like, none of these guys are highly recruited either.
Fran McCaffrey gets more undue hate than any high major head coach in the country. The guy wins every year. He goes to the NCAA tournament. He develops players. He produces pros. They're like Like, six of their seven best players are from the state of Iowa. They're building with in-state kids at, like, a non-talent-rich state. They've killed it, man. They've just killed it.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but their only two top 100 recruits are his sons, right?
Well, I don't think Connor was a top
100. Connor wasn't?
No, I don't think so.
So they have one top 100 recruit on their team.
That's correct.
And they also have one lottery pick, and they're not the same person.
That's correct.
I mean,
well, they might have two. I think I wouldn't be stunned if Chris Murray winds up being a lottery pick in 2023.
I mean, losing Keegan Murray and Bohannon, you'd think, I don't know. But the way that they reloaded last year, I mean, Iowa could be.
Next year, it'd be like Perkins.
Well, I mean, look.
Next year, it'd be like.
This weekend to like show their development, where you get a game where Sanford's on fire.
Sanford's really good. Like, he's not going to be Joe Wieskamp, but he might be the next best thing.
And then in the championship game, you get a couple AM1s from a gun delay, you know, out of the clouds.
I was busy telling people on Big Ten Media Row that I thought a gun delay might be the worst player in the Big Ten after how bad he looked against Northwestern. I thought it was a three-man race with Northwestern's Matt Nicholson and Illinois' Benjamin Bosman for Donk, as well as Josh Gundelay. Yeah, like, next year we're going to randomly show up and Riley Mulvey's going to be good.
I was going to say, are we ever going to see Riley Mulvey again after that three-pointer?
He might be.
Your seven-footer comes in and immediately pop. Three-pointer going up.
In fairness, Fran has known Riley Mulvey since, like, Riley Mulvey was, like, seven, I think. So
that's it. I'll get another chance.
Because the Mulvey family was, you know, Riley Mulvey's from Albany Academy. Grew up in the area. So right when Fran was at Siena. Yeah, like, next year, Aaron Euless is going to be good. But, like, even if you're not, like next year's core of Tony Perkins, Peyton Sanford, Patrick McCaffrey, and Chris Murray is, like, really not a bad place to start. And, like, hit the portal. Robrotza could come back for one more, you know?
They don't even need the portal. I mean, if anything, maybe you get one, like, athletic four-man.
Or you can do grad point guard.
You're not into Joe Toussaint?
If you wanted, like, a shooter, you know, get, like, a white kid who makes shots.
Yeah, Jalen Llewellyn just hit the portal.
Yeah, I know Northwestern reached out. I think they have zero chance in hell.
I was thinking Butler would be a great fit, but there's got to be a better combination of playing time and prestige than Butler.
Yeah, maybe Butler's probably going to take like Zeb Jackson or something.
Which, like, that's
what a disaster.
That's fine if he's like your sixth man, maybe, but
what a disaster.
I mean, it's not even fine for their sixth man because they have Lekosius and Taylor, who are both going to be.
People are loving Lekosius. People love Lekosius. But anyway,
he's a wild player. I mean, he lets it fly. How about, I mean, how is Travis Steele, how did they let him fly back with the team? Dude, get out of here.
It's absurd. Let's wrap up with the East, and then we can hit the coaching carousel briefly if you want, because it's been a little while.
No one loves coaching carousel more than me.
Oh, man. Beautiful time of year. So Baylor, we think, is somewhat vulnerable. They get paired with Kentucky. Kentucky is really good. I think we agree. I will say the potential for Kentucky and Purdue in the Sweet 16 team would be a lot of fun, because there hasn't been a team we've really seen all year that has the bigs to match Tshiebwe. Like, Zach Edey versus Oscar, with Zach like towering over Oscar, would be objectively hilarious to watch.
And it would be very tough for Purdue to keep up with Wheeler and Washington getting into the lane.
Correct.
Mason Gillis is playing better, though. He's really commanded that four spot.
Yes. My other thought on this region is I think that Indiana could be very sneaky here.
Yeah. So I don't know which hour of yours I was listening to, whether it was the three-man Weaver or the Millers or your whatever, but someone was saying who guards Maldonado? You think they could put Jordan Geronimo on the...
If he's healthy.
Oh, was he hurt?
He went down with a knee against Illinois and did not play in their next game. So
those games happened when I was at work, pretty much.
Soft.
Well, so I I was going to go dark for Providence Butler, you know, like shut off my phone. And I'm sitting there. It's like 2:15. And my boss is like, why aren't you watching the game? And I was like, oh, you know, I shut off my phone. I recorded it at home. He's like, oh, one of the sales guys is watching it now. And I was like, it is 2:15. I don't think the sales guy's watching a 80-50 Providence win with AJ Reed hitting 10 three-pointers. So then I turned my phone on and checked the score. But
classic.
Anyway.
Classic. Any other thoughts on – I feel like this regional, yeah, it feels like a – I kind of think it's like a Kentucky-UCLA collision course, but – this region feels like the most like wild, like the most like weird shit could happen. Because Baylor's vulnerable. I don't think UCLA is overwhelming. You know, Texas is Texas. Purdue is, you know, so bad defensively. Virginia Tech's surging. You got the two great mid majors. You've got Kentucky. Like, there's a lot here.
I was so close. I was the only one who said Virginia Tech wasn't going to make the tournament. I was so close.
It's too bad, Brad.
In the preseason, I said Virginia Tech's the first team out, BYU is the second team out. No one else had that. And now Virginia Tech finally starts hitting shots. I mean, they were on the ropes against Clemson on, like, Wednesday night.
Yeah, they needed the Darius Maddox buzzer beater.
I was so ready to just, you know, because I figured Texas was going to be a 5. And I said, you know, that would be the perfect spot to just pick a 5-12 upset because Texas, I think, had a ton of staying power. But, like, Texas's guards are so much more athletic than Virginia Tech's guards. And their defense is so strong. And while Aluma is a very good interior player, he's not someone that's going to overwhelm Christian Bishop, I don't think. You know, it's not like Kofi Coburn or Hunter Dickinson there.
It just seems like Storm Murphy is starting to find it.
Well, all these mid-major point guards, they or all these transfer point guards, they all suck. And at the end of the year, they're all turning on. I mean, Xavier Johnson's turning on. Kadari Richmond was turning it on before his hand injury. I mean, like, everyone. Devontae Jones has been better.
Yeah.
That's kind of the catch-22 with transfers is you need them right now, but you need to be patient. So what's the balance of playing them through their mistakes until they figure it out?
Yeah, no, you're right. Anything else on the first weekend? Like, I said my Final Four was Arizona, Gonzaga, Iowa, and Kentucky, with Gonzaga beating Arizona in the title game. My expert bracket is up at SI if you want to read it. Join the, you know, like 200,000 people who have, which is very scary. People are going to think I'm an idiot. My bracket matrix score was like 145, which is not great, but I did beat Joe Lenardi and I beat Jerry Palm. And as I described on Twitter, you know, like in Seinfeld, when George is picking out the kid for the scholarship, you know,
Frog is wrong.
What's up?
I said Frog. Frog is wrong.
What's Frog?
From that episode where he's interviewing the candidates.
Yeah.
He's like, what's your favorite animal?
Well, that was not the quote I was going for. That was the quote I was going to go for was right in the meaty part of the curve, not showing off, not falling behind. That was my bracket matrix summary.
Yeah, that's when he was explaining to the board why he took someone who wasn't a good student as his.
Because he said he wanted to be an architect, and then when he went in the meet when the kid went in the meeting, he said he wanted to be a city planner.
Right.
Kind of pissed off George because the architect was, you know, George's fake job. So.
That is a great episode. I always crack up with the line where it's like, what's your favorite animal? Frog?
You're wrong.
Frog? Frog is wrong.
Outstanding. Carousel, quickly, Brad. Or do you have a Final Four or you don't have a bracket yet?
I don't have one yet. But I'm definitely gonna have Gonzaga and Arizona and Kentucky. That's a lot of chalk. Might as well go with Providence.
Wow. Homer.
If not now, then when?
What a homer. What a sad state of affairs we have on this podcast.
I'm not a homer because I'm literally, my stomach has been in a knot since Friday night that we're going to lose this opening game to South Dakota State. Like I could barely focus on the games on Thursday. On Saturday, I was just so worried. Like, oh my God, we're gonna be a five seed and they're gonna have to play Michigan in the first round and get crushed. Like, oh my God, just kill me now. That was my whole Saturday. It was just like, oh my God, what have we done? Little did I know the committee had no idea that we lost to Creighton.
Well, they didn't watch any conference tournament games.
Yeah, they were out having dinner.
Oh yeah, they probably had St. Elmo's in Indianapolis. Yeah. get the shrimp cocktail.
No, but I mean, Auburn stinks away from home. Kansas is vulnerable. Everyone's gonna pick Iowa.
Yeah.
Wisconsin's banged up. LSU is weird. They have no coach.
Yep. No, that region stinks. I was the one behind the camera, by the way, in the video of Hummel giving Goodman the St. Elmo's. I don't know if that's like public knowledge.
I have no idea what you're referring to. So.
Oh, well, look, Robbie Hummel delivered Goodman some St. Elmo's shrimp cocktail at the Big Ten tournament.
Is this like a fancy restaurant, or is it like a pub?
Oh, you're not in the media circles. You don't know about St. Elmo's, Brad. St. Elmo's is this famous steakhouse in Indianapolis that serves, like, you know, nice steaks, you know, $50 steaks, but also it sells this, what it's really known for is its shrimp cocktail, and it has this, you know, cocktail sauce on it that is, like, absurdly spicy, apparently. Like, loaded with horseradish, like, clear out your sinuses, you know, cocktail sauce. And media members love St. Elmo's. They love tweeting about St. Elmo's.
The three foods that I won't eat: nuts, mustard, and horseradish. Oh. I can't stand horseradish.
Interesting.
I don't like that bitter flavor.
Well, no, if anyone's going to Indianapolis this week, I would.
I thought all of you sports writers were supposed to be broke. I thought all the people tweet about, oh, we don't make any money. Oh, this is a profession that makes no money. Blah blah blah. And you're going to the $50 steakhouse?
It really makes no sense. Like, I don't quite understand how it's become such a thing, but, like, it's become a thing where anytime there's, like, a big event in Indianapolis, everyone tweets about St. Elmo's. I've never been. My favorite restaurant in Indianapolis, for those that don't know, is a nice spot right next to the basketball arena called the Taxman. It's like a brew pub. Tremendous burgers, good fries. They have chicken and waffles that are delightful. This is not an advertisement. I just love the Taxman. Strong Moscow Mule. I don't know if we can call it that anymore, but Mule is terrific, so shout out to the action. Coaching carousel, Brad. Just hit on some of the stuff quick. Could we get a resolution with Maryland or Louisville soon? I think so. Particularly if Louisville's hiring Kenny Payne. You know, if that's the case, I wouldn't be surprised if it's done this week. If Maryland hires Kevin Willard, that would likely run into the weekend.
Maryland fans are probably going to be irate at hiring Willard, right?
They're going to be outrated whoever they hire.
Well, think Willard takes anybody with him? I don't think so. I think he's like he's out. You know, like I don't think that Kadari Richmond or Alexis Yetna is going to get the invitation to come down to Maryland. But
you wouldn't think. The big move over the weekend was Mike White to Georgia. Now Dennis Gates had really been trending there. Like, everyone was saying Dennis Gates is getting Georgia. And then all of a sudden, out of the blue, the buzz had been that Mike White was going to take Ole Miss. Like, Ole Miss was going to open, right, and they were going to hire Mike White because Mike White, you know, went there, and it's like friends with the AD, and like, it works out well. And all of a sudden, he's just at Georgia. It's like, okay, well, back to the drawing
board. Ole Miss was probably dragging their feet, and he was like, you know what, I got to get out of here because the fans are going to kill me.
You've got, like, I mean, This carousel is ridiculous.
The parachute is alive and well.
So half the SEC is going to open. So you have Mizzou, which fired Quanzo Martin.
I was shocked at that because it felt like everyone was being so cautious. Like, NC State's keeping Keats, Northwestern, Georgetown, Arizona State. They're all keeping their guys,
Stanford, Arizona State. Stanford, the only league that's being aggressive is the SEC. And they're all competing for the same candidates. It's quite odd, even though the candidates aren't even that great.
I saw Andrew Slater said, you know, someone said, you know, what's going on with LSU? And he's like, everyone's going to leave. The faucet's been turned off.
I mean, not wrong.
He also implied that Mississippi State already has a guy.
So Mississippi State has been interviewing candidates.
Yes.
Like, I don't know if that's like out there.
No, like, it is, yeah.
They haven't even fired Ben Allen, but they've like fully interviewed candidates. Like, I can confirm for sources of multiple names that have been interviewed at Mississippi State.
South Carolina is too, right?
South Carolina opened today.
I know, but they haven't interviewed before? No.
I don't know. I have not heard there.
I thought
you have South Carolina, you have Mississippi State, you have Mizzou, you have now Florida, LSU pops randomly, and you have no idea what the interest level is going to be in that job after Will Wade. I mean, look, I don't want to relitigate the Will Wade thing, but it is hilarious. So, like, the thing that's really bringing him down is the fact that he was trying to bribe, apparently, like, Javonte Smart's fiance to not talk. Like, objectively hilarious.
He burned bright and he burned fast. We're going to miss him.
Oh, yeah.
Missouri is a tough one. I didn't think that they were going to open. I mean, you had mentioned that the most forgettable game last year was Oklahoma and Missouri.
But
no one remembered that Missouri made the tournament last year.
I will say this. I was not surprised leading up because I knew that I had heard like 2 weeks before that the search firm was calling. Like Fogler was making calls. But I was quite surprised. I was a little surprised that they weren't going to like let him have another year. But you know, everyone wants to get into this market. You know, they all want like their piece of Jerome Tang. Like Jerome Tang seems like the perfect hire for me at LSU because he's been through like a gut job rebuild. But does he want that job?
I think you'd rather have LSU than Mississippi State or Missouri, right? And certainly South Carolina.
But do you want LSU with a 2-year postseason ban?
Why not? What could go wrong? See, this is why I was saying that the Oklahoma State postseason ban was actually beneficial for Oklahoma State, because it happened after the school year started, so the guys couldn't transfer, and now the ban is lifted, so there's no reason to transfer because of the ban.
Right, that's what I'm saying. It's going to be hard for LSU for the first couple of years.
Yeah.
Like, there's going to be such a cloud. But it's supposedly definitely
there was a
job.
Cloud over, like, Miami, and they didn't do anything wrong or you know, whatever.
Who knows?
That seems like that story is being fed directly from Jim Larrañaga to all the media members. We couldn't recruit anyone. We didn't do anything wrong. Oh, my God. Two other teams that were really cautious, Clemson and Washington.
Washington officially not opened? Is that like a thing?
What'd you say?
Is Clemson officially not open?
I didn't think that they fired Brad Brownell. I think they
Well, no, but is it official that it's not going to open, is what I'm saying. Is it official that it's not going to open? I don't think that's true, but I could be.
Well, maybe it'll still open, but Mike Hopkins really pulled the wool over everyone's eyes with that nice conference record.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's what you got to do with these Pac-12 jobs.
Like, yeah, once I saw that they were like 6-3, I was like, oh, he's going to sell that, and he's going to stay.
What's objectively hilarious about all of that, they had no shot. Like that was the job, again, the preseason that every single person circled. Like, not like everyone in the industry, when they had their November board, it was like, all right, like, Washington's going to open, what else? And they don't come close to the MIT. And yet here they are. So the bar is low.
I mean, who's happier right now? Florida fans that Mike White left? Or do you think St. John's fans will be even happier than Florida fans if Mike Anderson leaves for Tulsa?
Oh, man. That's going to be a beautiful parachute.
I mean, even before the season, because, you know, I thought St. John's was going to be pretty good this year. I thought that they would be like the 8-9 game. So I had screenshotted a few St. John's fan takes, and the one guy just responded to a Zach Zach Brazilier preseason practice article. It was, Mike Anderson is a trash can coach.
And, well, how about the yeah, that'd be a great parachute.
How about, and then how about Rick Pitino George to Washington. St. John's? That'd be perfect.
That'd be great. How about George Washington firing Jamie? Everyone in the industry was like ready for him to get fired last year. There was like all sorts of rumors, and then he gets fired this year after they were like kind of not horrible.
And they lost Ira Lee in the preseason.
Too. I will say there may be more there than just wins and losses.
But yeah. Yeah, who are they going to hire?
Another, maybe Archie Miller.
If you're Archie Miller, GW, UMass, or URI?
If I were Archie Miller, I would say UMass or URI, but I don't know that Archie Miller views it that way.
URI, you get the Mitchell twins. They're still on the team.
I would not base it any on the roster. You can reportal.
Like half of URI hit the portal today.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't matter, though. I mean.
No. But any other carousel notes before we wrap up this podcast?
Let's see. Florida Gulf Coast is going to hire Pat Chambers?
Oh, that was very lame. Very uninspiring.
Just hire any other, like, hire Quanzo Martin, hire Jamie and Christian, you know, hire any of these guys that got fired.
Ben Howland.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mark Turgeon.
I feel like a lot of, like, guys would love that as, like, a retirement job.
Yeah.
Sit on the beach, make 300 grand, and win 20 games.
Your former favorite player, Aiden Carpenter, hit the portal.
Your audio cut on me.
Oh, so your former favorite player, Aiden Carpenter, hit the portal.
I know. You
loved him so much until he actually had to play.
He can't shoot. Like, he's not a point guard. He's
like, get this kid out of here.
He's going to be at like Central Connecticut next year and average like 11 points on 38% from the field.
So who you guys lose? So you're losing Carpenter, Hopkins,
Gaines,
Playtech.
No, Playtech will be back.
Oh.
So next year, you bring back McCollum, who's been really good, Billups, Playtech, Colby Rogers, and Stormo. You had Taylen Martin. He hopefully get in the portal. And then you make some moves.
There you go.
Let's see. But
Stormo's anyway. Back, you said? Yeah.
Right. Stormo back for a fifth. Beautiful thing.
There you go.
All right, folks. I will not bore you with more Siena recruiting talk. This has been the CVP Central Podcast. This is March. We are excited about the first weekend. Enjoy it, folks. It's the best time of the year.